Hello. Welcome to the Geekstrom podcast, the, I don't know, premier podcast for things that I like to talk about with people that I know through the internet. I'm your host, Frankie, and joining me for the inaugural episode are Jared.
Hey, hey.
And Ethan.
What up?
From the website that we all kind of sporadically write for, hardmantopleasecom.
You sporadically write.
Oh, well, I don't sporadically write. I write almost every week.
No,
if you look at the front page of the website, it's basically just like my blog. But yeah, well, yeah, you know, no big deal. You can listen to us, the three of us, and then some other people every now and again, but I don't listen to those, on the Hard Men to Please podcast. And then Ethan's particular nonsense on Asterixar, which I believe is a podcast that's devoted to just the lamp. From the Pixar
logo? It's just children's movies.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, all animation.
I thought it was just the lamp.
All PG.
Yeah, okay. They're doing a companion piece to this one, a Boss Baby.
I will be missing that one as well. So today we're going to talk about Baby Driver, a film directed by British hero and, I don't know, fellow requirer of beards, Edgar Wright. Mm. That stars the unfortunately named Ansel Elgort, which I think I'm pronouncing that correctly.
I'm pretty sure that's a Nazi officer name.
Yeah, that's not good. You don't want to be an Ansel. And also Jamie Foxx and John Hamm. So we're going to get started by just seeing what you guys thought about this movie. So Jared, we'll start with you.
So this was when we did back in January, like the top movies that you were looking forward to. I think this was pretty easily the top of my list. It's one of the only movies I was really looking forward to from a long distance. So it's one of those expectations movies. And I think I told Ethan this, like a day before I saw this, I talked to a friend who'd already seen it. And this goes to show that you should watch a movie you want to see as soon as possible.
Yes.
And the guy, he's just like, oh, you got to see it. That's my favorite movie that I've seen in like 10 years. And I just know it's going to win like all the Oscars. And he just went on to like describe every Oscar he thought this movie would win. And so unfairly, my expectations were kind of, you know, it's gotten great reviews too. But my expectations went through the roof. So I was slightly disappointed. That's not off from how I usually feel about Edgar Wright movies, though. I usually am slightly disappointed the first time I see it, and then they grow on me. But it is a good movie, and I was entertained by it, and I enjoyed myself.
Well, how deep did that guy go on the Oscars? Was he, like, going into editing, costume?
Dude, he went far enough that he said it should win Best Original Song, even though he wasn't sure, and now I can confirm there are no original songs. Oh, I guess there is one, actually.
The one with Run the Jewels.
Yeah.
Was he
come
slow?
Come on. You can't come.
Was he slow?
You're
gonna
already
win the
making
Oscar.
This podcast look bad.
Oh, man.
Well, okay. So what about you, Ethan?
Yeah, well, I don't want to copy Jared's answer exactly, but pretty much the
just
same
go ahead.
Experience.
It's fine. People can't really tell you guys apart anyway.
Yeah, just play back what Jared said, and then we'll see. That's what I said.
Yeah, we'll do a remix of it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, same thing. A big Edgar Wright fan from the Cornetto trilogy, so I was pretty hyped for it. I mean, all told, I definitely liked it, but if I didn't know it was an Edgar Wright movie, I probably would have enjoyed it more, because I wouldn't be, like, sitting waiting for the Edgar Wrightness to come through that I don't quite know comes across all the way, but, I mean, it's definitely a solid summer blockbuster and like really fun movie, so
it almost
give
seems
it a solid
like,
B.
Yeah, it seems like you said, it's not as drenched, I guess, in Edgar Wrightness as you used to. It's almost like his Jackie Brown in a way. It seemed like, you know, a step towards, I mean, I guess just being also, you know, American and original to him. It's, you know, it's a little different than what you might be expecting if you especially are a big Cornetto fan.
Okay, so that actually is a really interesting point about if you hadn't known this was an Edgar Wright movie, that you think that you would have enjoyed it more. Do you have, like, a specific reason for that? Like, what what brought you to that kind of assumption or assertion?
So that's basing it largely on the Cornetto trilogy, which I think each of those movies within their own right are like pretty much perfect films. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I guess I've also, have you guys watched those Every Frame a Painting videos on YouTube?
Yep. Yeah.
Have you specifically watched the Edgar Wright one with visual comedy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I watched that like pretty soon before watching Baby Driver because I was like so hyped for mm-hmm. it. And I don't know. I feel like maybe it was missing some element of that. Honestly,
well,
maybe
it's not
it
really
was
that much of a comedy.
Yeah, maybe that's part of it. And maybe also it's missing Simon Pegg
or Nick Frost. Yeah. But so the question that I have then to kind of also go into some of Jared's very valid criticisms. Edgar Wright's movies, besides the Scott Pilgrim one, up to this point have been genre spoofs. So with Shaun of the Dead, you had the zombie outbreak apocalypse type movies, and then you had Hot Fuzz, which is, you know, action thriller type situation, and then World's End was that one's pretty cut and dry. So those ones have had kind of a built-in, like, there's obviously the Edgar Wright sheen and his styling and his flavor, but they also had like a built-in background. So did you guys consider...
Yeah, there's like a reference
point totally.
There.
Do you guys consider this one to be like a bank heist, chase sequence movie genre spoof?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it could be, but like you were saying, Jared, I don't know if it's enough of a comedy maybe to be considered a spoof. Mm-hmm. It's like pretty straightforward, but coming into it, that's what I expected. I thought this would be his take on Drive, mm-hmm. pretty much, and make it kind of more silly. Which, I mean, he did. It is very, I think it is, like, maybe not, like, outwardly funny, but it's definitely, like, a sillier take and, like, lighthearted.
Yeah, it is a step away from being a spoof, though. I mean, it seems like the only element of it that's overly, almost like a parody is the Mike Myers joke.
Yeah.
Where they're, you know, robbing a bank with Mike Myers' mask. But everything else, it feels like it takes place... I mean, that's one thing I want to talk about with this is tonally, it seems to take place much more in the real world than anything he's done before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's what I love about his other movies, or at least the Cornetto trilogy, too. They're like, they really get you into a space that you're accepting of the parody and the spoof more. I don't know. It's more of a world building, I guess, than this one had.
I would say that this movie, it would be very out of place for someone to be abruptly named like Aaron Aronson at the end after someone referenced that jokingly at the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't quite...
Yeah.
It'll break the kind of the frame of the movie a little bit.
Well, I think that this movie actually is a little bit... It replaces the comedy with drama. So it being a more dramatic, I guess, avenue for him to go down. Like, even... I think probably the most dramatic of the Cornetto trilogy would probably be The World's End, just because it was dealing with, you know, themes of, you know, youth and...
Yeah, a lot more pathos in that
one. Yeah, and a lot of nostalgia and that type of stuff. But still, you know, it was slapstick humor and fighting off robots and aliens and stuff like that. So it was like, it never allowed you to take it that much more serious, especially with its, like, prologue. After, you know, basically after everything had gone to shit, and it's like, but they're still making jokes about everything. Like, even, you know, the fan named Cornetto trilogy was confirmed by an actual, you know, I think rapper hitting a fence at the very end in front of Nick Frost's face. So yeah, I just think that this being more of a dramatic take, I guess, on a genre, especially in, you know, comparison to the rest of the stuff that he's made, I think allows me to see it from a different perspective and not kind of put it up against those other ones, because, I mean, those movies are some of my, all three of them are some of my favorite movies, and I even really like Scott Pilgrim, and that was straight from source material, but it had enough of his style,
you know,
visual styling and directorial style that it was an Edgar Wright movie. And I felt that was present here, but with it being something that was even still being a genre movie, standing on its own as far as the writing was considered, allowed me to be like, oh, so like he can do just basically anything. Like his style just comes through regardless of what he's doing. It doesn't necessarily need to be genre specific or all about the deconstruction of a genre via comedy. It can just be something where, oh, this guy's just a really, really good director.
Yeah,
what, I agree with that. Oh, go ahead, Ethan.
What it felt like to me was kind of like a musician. You know, they have like a distinct style and they put out, you know, a few albums that are perfect in their style, but then they try to make an album that's more commercially available. Mm-hmm. Like, let's say Bruce Springsteen. Man, makes a lot of great albums, and he doesn't really strike it big until Born to Run, which is like the most commercially poppy of his albums. But it worked because, I mean, that was his biggest seller. And this is, if I'm not mistaken, probably Edgar Wright's highest grossing film. But like to us who are like fans of his other stuff, it's a little bit less Edgar Wright and like a little bit more toned down to appeal to a broader audience, which, I mean, it worked, but it's not going to be as entertaining to me as, you know, someone likes the other stuff.
I didn't think it was an intentional push to do a more broader audience. I assumed it was just because his goal in the movie seemed to be more the audio gimmick, which I thought was really risky, but I think it paid off, and that's one reason I really loved the movie. Putting the music so front and center, and with the the character having his earbuds in basically the whole movie, and then when he removes one, you know, half the audio leaves. And just having the kind of diegetic music was kind of the plan for the movie. You know, all the music. Actually, I don't know if it's all the music, but by and large, the music is actually playing in his ears, and that's why you're hearing it. And I just felt like probably the rest of it was a frame to hang that on.
Yeah.
And that he's kind of running through a genre flick. I didn't feel like he was intentionally dumbing it down. I assumed it was just a case of probably a lot of the comedy from his earlier stuff was from his writing partner in Simon Pegg or his source material with Scott Pilgrim.
True.
Yeah, I've kind of felt the same way. But so the point that you were making about the music, I think that for me was, because that was so central to the entirety of the movie, from the plot to the actual pacing of the movie and a lot of the sequences, that being something that Edgar Wright has used profusely in almost all of his movies, I think was the part that made this very much an Edgar Wright movie to me. It was almost like he had come up with the track listing prior and then built a movie around it. He had an idea and he's like, well, these would be cool songs to have in it, and this is what I could do with this song and that song and so on and so forth. And that was also for me one of the parts of the movie that made it so amazing and made it such a fun, different movie that, yeah, it was something that...
Yeah, I was tapping my toes throughout, like, the whole movie.
I forgot, and well, I'm sure this is going to be something that everyone says, but I'd forgotten about Hocus Pocus, like, as a song that I'd heard probably, like, my dad play when I was younger or something like that. And then, but as soon as that came on, especially with what was going on in the movie around the time, I was like, this song is fucking badass. This is a great song. This is, like, this is the obvious song for this, and it's... I don't know. I think that for me was probably the part. Like, there are sequences where, like, you know, I think when they're in the diner, she moves like a pot of coffee across the screen and it's shot from above, which is straight up from Shaun of the Dead. And just a lot of visual cues that is like motifs or style points from movies that he's had prior and everything. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is. You know, it was, to me, especially having watched all those movies so many times, I think Hot Fuzz is on Netflix right now, and I've probably watched it, like, 3 or 4 times just to, like, have something on. And just, it's almost like a knee-jerk response when you see something that has been in one of his other movies and it's kind of happens again. And you're like, oh, that's an Edgar Wright thing. That's an Edgar Wright thing. So on and so on.
Hmm. And I think he did actually do the soundtrack first. Mm-hmm. Right? I don't know if you were insinuating that or not, but...
Putting that on wax.
Yeah, put that on wax.
I think I was looking at the track listing and the runtime for the soundtrack, and it's like 30 songs and maybe 12 minutes shorter than the runtime of the movie. So it's just interesting how that all worked out. So what do you think about this being, especially in a summer movie season where you've got sequels and a bunch of comic book movies and a bunch of prequels as well and everything like that, and you know this being one of the few, you know, air quotes original movies, and how that helped it succeed against it just being something that, you know, people have known is coming out for 5 or 6 years.
It seemed like it really came out of nowhere. I mean, in terms of people talking about it, almost everything I heard was just people like posting on social media about it, or, you know, apropos of nothing, telling me to get my hopes way too high for it. I didn't notice a whole lot of like overbearing marketing for it, but I guess not that easy to market to, since I don't watch TV and I use ad blocker.
You do have you Twitter, go. Though. I saw a lot of ads for it on Twitter.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I was hearing about it for a while before it came out. So, yeah, it just kept... I tried to keep my expectations low, but they freaking kept building.
Well, yeah, it's Edgar Wright, so what can you do? I was following him on Instagram, I think, and when, you know, he was very careful about the amount of stuff that he was leaking, you know, set photos and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I still have no idea what this movie is about, but it seems pretty cool. So I'm, you know, same as you guys, just trying to keep my expectations low, but it's just like, I can't not be super hype about this. And then I think as the cast started to come out, and John, is it Barenthal? Is that how you say his last name? One of those things where I see it all the time, but I've never actually heard it out loud, I don't think. And Jamie Foxx and John Hamm. And
Kevin Spacey. I haven't said Kevin Spacey yet.
So, all right.
Yeah.
What did you guys think about him in this movie?
I feel like Kevin Spacey's gotten to that point that he's just...
the same guy in everything?
I don't want to accuse him of phoning it in, but I don't know if he's not like a... what's his name? Gary Oldman, who can do like 50 different, you know, takes. At this point, you get... Kevin Spacey, you get Kevin Spacey.
You're saying he's become Bruce
Willis. I actually want to talk about the cast in this movie a bit. I don't think it's lazy. I think it's just... I mean, he does nail that Monsters, Inc. joke.
Yeah.
I think about that. And I don't know if anybody else could have delivered that line in a way that would be half as funny. But other than that, I do think that generally the cast in this movie is weirdly a weak point. I don't think they quite gelled, and I think Spacey is kind of at the top of the list for me on guys who I probably would have recast just for the sake of being a little less predictable, I guess. I don't know.
Interesting. Okay, so if we go from Spacey, unless you have anything to say about Spacey, Ethan.
Well, I was going to say, I love Spacey, and I think he's great in the role. I think the character itself was kind of weird, just like the turn he has at the end.
Yeah.
Spoiler. But I didn't think there was anything against Spacey himself. It was just kind of weirdly written. And again, like, I don't know if someone said it before, but like the tone is kind of weird there. Because at the beginning of the movie, or maybe halfway through or something, Kevin Spacey's like threatening this kid to like kill his whole family and everyone he knows and loves. Mm-hmm. And at the end, he's like sacrificing himself for him.
Yeah.
So that was kind of weird. But I don't think that's anything wrong with the casting.
That might be true.
My beef with the casting? John Hamm sucks. I'm going to say it. He is so boring on screen.
Dude, I have written down here, Hamm and Barenthal should have swapped roles. I would have loved to see Barenthal in the whole last act of the movie in that role.
I agree with
that. Yeah, he's a way better like bad guy, too.
Yeah, exactly. even in just his, you know, 3 or 4 minutes of screen time total, he was a lot more menacing, and he can play suave, no problem. So I mean, I guess that kind of take. Actually, mm-hmm. I didn't think that John Hamm was amazing in the role, but it was nice to see. Like, have you guys watched Mad Men?
No, I did not. I mean, I've seen it. I've seen a bit of it, but
it's kind of like if his character in Mad Men actually, you know, had ever become as big a dick as what he was perceived to be in the show, and then also had, like, you know, an automatic rifle. But the characterization between him and his wife was a little goofy. But I personally really enjoyed Jamie Foxx's character, and I didn't at first when he was first introduced. I was like, all right, this is, I think I wrote in the review that it was like the character he played in Horrible Bosses, which was,
I said that same thing. Yeah. Him and Spacey kind of play the same characters again.
But then he actually acted, you know, within the role, and I was like, oh, okay. Cause I thought, you know, again, I thought it was going to be kind of what you thought from Spacey, where it's not quite a phone in, but it's something that he can do really easily. So he just did that. But the scene,
yeah, I think the difference is what he does is maybe a little more interesting, and he probably had better. I mean, like Ethan was talking about, when Spacey threatens, you know, kind of at the, I don't know if it's the turning point or whatever, you know, the kid, I'm going to kill your whole family. I mean, he just blankly says, like, you know, I could kill your whole family, and it's like, that's just kind of a trash line. Like, you could make that so much more interesting. Mm-hmm. So I think that maybe Jamie Foxx just, I mean, I don't know how much if he improvised anything, but he just was a little more dynamic of a character. Yeah. And, you know, by virtue of that, even though he wasn't really playing outside of, you know, like Jamie Foxx's wheelhouse, mm-hmm. it was still more entertaining. Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess we should talk about Ansel, our Nazi lead.
Oh yeah, forgot about him.
Yeah, see, that's one of the things that I think is most interesting about this movie is that the title character is really, boring. I don't want to say that he's just an audience surrogate, you know, but
mm-hmm. Well, he is literally in the, you know, the sound design.
Yeah. So it's interesting.
I mean, I heard that Edgar Wright finished the script, like, he's been like working on this forever, and he finished the script in like 2011 mm-hmm. or something. And I feel like he must have seen Drive come out with its like borderline autistic driver character and been like, son of a bitch. I was going to do that.
That was my thing.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Baby in this movie could seem like he grows up to be Ryan Gosling in Drive. And then, because like similarly, I mean, Baby's like pretty much deaf by the end of it, right? Mm-hmm. So that kind of would make sense why he's pretty much a mute in Drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would. That's true.
John Hamm's character. Have, really, really terrible plastic masks.
Yeah.
And he likes the retro jackets. It's all coming together.
Yeah, he even gets driving gloves.
Yeah, but he gets rid of those, you know, when he thinks that he's mm-hmm. finally out. Symbolic, but they just keep pulling him back in.
I said he was boring, but I think that kid was fine.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, the character's supposed to be boring.
He was nice enough.
Yeah.
You know, he made you want him to be happy, made you want him to get with the waitress from Twin Peaks in there. Mm-hmm.
and help out his deaf, like, I don't know,
his foster dad. Yeah, that was cute as hell. Yeah. I mean, they had cute interactions mm-hmm. with the people he was supposed to have them with. I thought it was weird when he like intentionally murders Jamie Foxx. It was like, I didn't quite get mm-hmm. that from this guy, but you know, you push someone to the edge, and killing's as easy as breathing. So I
heard. Speaking from personal experience, I thought, you know, it worked within the arc, because I kind of feel that what was really good about him being, I don't want to say he was a bland character, but kind of a a character that you could project onto. You could see a lot of what was going on with the other, at least the male characters surrounding him, you know, especially with, and this kind of goes to Jared's unloved tweet earlier today, but if you listen to what John Bernthal's character, I'm still wondering if I'm saying that last name right, and what he says about, you know, eventually you're going to have to, you know, get your hands dirty, and then it just kind of, that idea is just repeated over and over again, so you know that eventually he is going to have to get his hands dirty, and that the only way for him to get out was to do that, at least in his mind at the time. He's like, this guy probably going to kill me anyway, so, oh, look at these spoilers, strategically placed rebar, let's go for it. and then what song kicks in? Hocus Pocus. Yeah, brilliant.
There you go. Yeah, I don't know.
I was really loving them playing Intermission by Blur for that whole scene. That was one of those songs that I could totally buy Edgar Wright starting with the song and then building around it.
I was a big fan.
Yeah, I should get that playlist.
Of the whole... So... One last thing about Ansel, because I feel like he's kind of milquetoast and shouldn't take up too
his lips.
Much. Well,
whoa, what do you want to say about his lips?
They're luscious.
Luscious lips.
That's how he got the role, right?
Oh.
Hey, you'll have to ask her to write that one.
the beginning sequence with him when the song Bell Bottoms is playing, and he starts lip syncing, you know, and he's rocking back and forth and singing into the water bottle and everything. At that point, I was like, oh no, this movie's going to suck. This movie's going to be the worst. I was so worried because I was like, what is this nonsense that's going on? I don't know what's happening. But, you know, then the driving started happening. I was like, okay.
Yeah, the very next sequence redeemed it. I do think that that plays to the part. I mean, the first thing I heard about this movie, the whole idea of him having tinnitus, which I didn't know you could have chronic tinnitus. I thought it was like just in reaction. Like Children of Men says that when you get it, it's like the swan song of your hearing that specific, whatever you call it, decibel
tone
or whatever. Yeah. But anyway, so he's got chronic tinnitus and he like plays his iPhone or his iPod while he drives. It reminded me first of Blade Trinity when Jessica Biel's character comes up with like vampire slaying playlists, and it's just the most cringe inducing thing in the world. So I do think Edgar Wright deserves some credit for doing something that could have been really potentially, I mean, he's putting it out there. It's a you know, I name checked him earlier, but it's kind of a Tarantino move to like put way out there, here are what my tastes are, and you're going to be dealing with it, you know, not subtly, like right in your face for the next 2 hours. But I think he pulled it off, and I think that's worth, you know, kind of commending him for doing something like that. Although at the same time, if you're, what's frustrating about it is if you, like, are writing a script, you can't do any of that.
Oh, no.
You know, it's like you're not allowed to like basically even put in what song you think would be good because it's like, well, you know, they're going to take it out anyway. So he had to get to a certain point to be able to do it, I guess.
Well, I would like to thank you for making an incredible segue, because my next thing was going to be, what do you think this means for Edgar Wright overall? Because to us nerds, he's a household name. He's obviously a talented director. He's, I would say before this, at least 4 for 4. I haven't yet to watch a Fistful of Fingers. I've been trying to track that down for a long time. But for movies that have been, you know, released and everything, I like everything that he's done a whole lot. And he was able to kind of position himself to where he had enough clout to be able to pull something like this off, but where it still comes across as like a more independent movie. So what do you think this does for him going forward?
Well, to play off my own analogy I made earlier with, you know, a musician getting their big hit, I would hope it would mean he gets, you know, bigger budgets going forward. I would think it would. Mm-hmm. I honestly didn't look into the numbers, I guess. I'm just assuming this movie's making a lot of money.
It's made 120 to this point on a $34 million budget, and I don't know what the
oh, okay.
I don't know if that it considers the add stuff, because
From what I've heard, you double the budget, and that's if you get past that, it's, you know, then you're making money.
Yeah, so this
he's
is
like quadrupled the budget, so he's good.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what I would expect going forward. Maybe he actually does a superhero movie this time.
Oh yeah, that's a he said that he still hasn't ever watched Ant-Man.
Hey, me neither.
Yeah.
Yes, we got that in common.
Well, the weird thing is, I mean, he did. I thought it was. I mean, Scott Pilgrim is definitely my least favorite movie he's done. I didn't think it was bad. I think I was also turned off by how gonzo like Scott Pilgrim fans were for it. So I was like, all right,
yeah,
I'm not in that zone.
Do you remember Adam? Zone.
Yes, Adam was fucking gonzo for that movie.
Yeah, I think he saw it like six times in theaters or something like that.
Damn.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Yeah, no. It was a little, I don't know, it was just kind of like, all right, I guess this isn't my movie. But, it, you know, I mean, kind of, I agree to some degree that I think that he needed some amount of, like, capital to play this. But it's not the same as him doing, like, the big, you know, like Chris Nolan doing Batman Begins. Yeah. I mean, this movie, I'm sure the budget for the music was pretty high, but I mean, he could have done it, you know, more or less out of the gates, like after, you know, one hit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm hoping that he doesn't do a superhero movie and kind of go down that path. I hope he continues to just say, you know, I mean, again, kind of like Tarantino, I mean, who does his own stuff. Yeah. And it's more fulfilling for that reason. Like, I think he's a really good director, and I think he could direct action really well. But I kind of would be sad to see him kind of just walk. I mean, it really bothers me. I don't know if it bothers you guys to see, like, these, like, actors who you've heard forever. Like, fucking Jeremy Irons is playing, like, Alfred the Butler now.
Yes.
Michael Caine, you know.
To hurt you a little bit further, just so that, you know, you can make sure that you're still alive and feel pain.
Yeah, what's up?
Patrick Stewart, is going to be in the Emoji movie.
Oh, God.
I believe as the poop emoji, if I'm not mistaken.
No.
Yes.
Jesus Christ. I mean, it's not Robert De Niro jacking off in Dirty Grandpa or
that's
whatever,
true.
But I mean, it is weird to see everyone get sucked into the same black hole of, like, you have to play, you know, fucking, you know, Robin's mom in the, you know, the trapeze sequence or something after you've done like 30 years on Broadway and in, you know, films. So I hope that he just kind of continues to forge his own path. He's obviously going to get a lot of gravity from, you know, his pick of stars. And even then, I would hope that he maybe is a little more discerning and he picks people who maybe aren't A-listers.
Yeah.
And not John Hamm.
Definitely not John Hamm again.
So
I like John Hamm. I don't know why I like him. You know why I like him?
Because
he's so good on SNL.
Yeah.
Well, that's, and he was really good in 30 Rock because he was like,
oh, yeah.
Playing what I think a lot of people perceived him to be. I think I heard an interview where he said his first role in, I want to say, like Ally McBeal or something, was good looking guy at the bar. So, you know, that's just like who he's been for forever. And they played that up in 30 Rock so well. I think they called it the bubble, where he would just get like free shit all the time. People told him he was like great at tennis, but he was the worst and all sorts of stuff. So, you know, I think for this, would you consider this then, if we're using Chris Nolan as a litmus for this, to be like his Memento or his Batman Begins?
Hmm.
I don't know if I'd say Batman Begins.
Yeah, because he's still playing with someone else's toys. I mean, maybe his Prestige, you know?
Mm.
Something that is obviously he's very into, but it's still pretty big budget, big stars. A fairly decent, not mega blockbuster, you know, not making, you know, $1 billion or whatever, but...
Yeah, I
it's probably a good.
I'm
good
okay
analogy.
With him staying away from, you know, the superheroes and stuff. I really would have liked to have seen what his Ant-Man turned out like, but you know, for what it was, considering the character, it ended up fine. It wasn't great or anything. It was like a lot of, you know, the middle of the road Marvel movies. And yeah, I wouldn't mind, because I just watched Dunkirk this last week, and
oh, it's out. God damn.
What?
Yeah, it's been out.
Oh yeah, yeah, it came out last Friday at the same time as Valerian.
Well, luckily I've heard nothing about that, so oh. If I see that, I get to still see that clean.
Well, without saying anything in particular about it, it's just interesting to see what someone can do when they have kind of the keys to the kingdom. You know, when they can kind of decide what it is that they want without having the kind of bonds of being stuck in a trilogy or something like that. So I think, you know, even that he was allowed to get Interstellar and Inception kind of up and running while he was still doing the Batman stuff, I still think that it kind of, you know, it changed his filmmaking style a little bit. And if there's one thing that I personally need Edgar Wright to retain, as long as he continues to make film, is his personal style, and it to not be kind of tainted by, you know, too much money or too much fame or anything like that. I think that musician analogy is kind of perfect. You know, just like you don't want your
nice
your band to yeah that was a compliment for you. You don't want your band to ever make you feel like they sold out, and that you have to kind of, you know, and that was one of the things when I heard that this movie was kind of getting critical buzz, and I was like, this might be something that, you know, like my friends that are maybe a little bit more right-leaning would even enjoy, you know, like people that are outside of my sphere of immediacy where I have a lot of things in common would also like it. Because once that starts to happen, it starts to, you see cracks in your dome start to form, and you just see it, the little ephora start to kind of go through the cracks, and you're like, no. This is mine. This has been mine forever. It's like, you never saw Shaun of the Dead, motherfuckers. You didn't see that shit. You weren't watching that in 2002 at a movie theater in Brandon, Florida with me. You were watching it now because it's part of a 3-pack that you can get from Walmart or some shit. But at the same time, it's like, you want them to still be able to make stuff, and you have to actually be successful to make things. So it's just like that kind of catch-22 when it comes to stuff. And
yeah, like, would you be sad or would you be happy to find out that, like, the next James Bond movie was going to be directed by Edgar Wright?
I think I would be
happy.
That specifically would just be interesting to me, and it would have to be something where I would keep a close eye on it going forward, because it would be something that, like, is even more difficult to read than, like, a superhero movie or something like that, because, like, James Bond is James Bond. And you know, if he, like, it would be like the thing where I would be immediately hyped up for it if he, like, cast Idris Elba, like, right off the bat. He's like, no, that's my dude, so we're just going for it. It's going to be interesting. So I'd be like, what would an Edgar Wright James Bond movie be like? That's something that I just can't even, at this point in my mind, I just can't even really think about, like, what the differences would be in the overall universe of James Bond. You know, like, because I could see him spoofing the Pierce Brosnan James Bonds with Idris Elba. It'd be like a genre spoof within a genre, like a specific person within the genre, a spoof of it, like kind of a spoofception type situation. So that
yeah,
could be cool.
Series
but
spoof.
At the same time, it's just like, you know, that's when you start getting states involved and people that are like, oh, you know, people that, the same people that can't keep their shit together because there's a female Doctor Who now. You know, it's like, what the hell is Edgar Wright doing directing a James Bond? He's not, you know, it's like, fuck off, you know, just let him make the movie. But yeah, it would be interesting. But, you know, I do hope, a big part of me hopes that he does another movie with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, at least one, you know, like maybe they've made their three and they've gone off and made a bunch of movies by themselves and stuff now, and they're a little bit older, a little bit wiser. They got some money, you know. Simon Pegg's got that Star Trek money. Nick Frost has got that Cuban furry money. So, you know, and that Badlands money, so maybe they can come together and just make something that they've always been thinking about. So that would be neat, I think.
Yeah, just hopefully, yeah, it gets just carte blanche going forward. But yeah, hey, it's anything.
One of those things that. Go ahead, Ethan.
I was just, because, I mean, you're asking about, you know, whatever Edgar Wright did next. I've kind of got the season tickets, you know, so whatever he does, I'm pretty much in on.
Agreed.
Yeah.
So it would take, like, several missteps in a row for me to get off that train, I guess. So right now I'm full steam ahead.
So the last Baby Driver question is, you know, that's called a pregnant pause.
Okay.
Baby, I get
baby.
I was trying, but that's now it seems like it's not funny at all. So I'm just going to ask the question. Sequel.
Yeah, you're going to want to cut
yes
that.
Yes or no? Well, that's going in. We show you how the sausage is made here on Geekstrom.
Sequel, I wouldn't mind that if they announce one. I did think the one thing that was disappointing about this movie, kind of aside from expectations, was the fact that the movie itself sets you up. You know, obviously Edgar Wright is, you know, big on foreshadowing. And, you know, so John Hamm asks Ansel Adams what his, like, you know, go-to, you know, Bad Out of Hell song yeah is, and he says Sheer Heart Attack by Queen, and you're like, oh my god, the end of this movie is going to be the car chase, the end all car chase, is it's going to top the first two. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be to, you know, Sheer Heart Attack. It's going to be just like the perfect,
wasn't it Brighton Rock,
you know, distillation of what the song is about. What was that?
Wasn't it Brighton Rock?
It was Brighton Rock.
I thought he said Sheer Heart Attack was his song.
Maybe John Hamm said that, but no. I think Ansel Adams, as you called him, said Brighton Rock.
Yeah, it's Brighton Rock.
Oh, okay.
But I know exactly what you mean.
But he like pulls the rug because it's like getting ready to go, and then he just rams the car, yeah, and it's not at all that. So I feel like, you know, looking back, it's really hard to imagine someone topping those first two car chases. Mm-hmm. It seems like whatever he didn't do in the first one, he did in the second one, in both stunts and just ideas. Yeah. You know, the whole idea of the switch in the three red cars was really clever. Mm-hmm. So I'd be on board for a second movie that, you know, just kind of spectacle Fast and the Furious style, you know, gave the promise of stepping up and kind of fulfilling that expectation. Mm-hmm.
Okay, give me a second here. Let me get my point out here because I got a lot to unpack. But it'll be worth it at the end. So, sequel. Yeah, I could see a sequel. I would see it. Like I said, I already got the season tickets to Edgar Wright. But I think the movie did itself a disservice at the end, setting up a sequel. I think they should have cut all that jail stuff out. So end the movie when Ansel Adams and the waitress from Twin Peaks is driving away. End it right there, and then like leave it ambiguous so you could set up whatever sequel. Maybe she's driving, or maybe they have a baby.
Oh shit!
That can
and
drive.
So it's kind of like a baby that can drive. And
he was born in the backseat after being conceived in the backseat.
There you go.
While driving,
we're riding it right now.
I don't know how it happens, but they figured it out.
And we, you know, he's kind of like a mini me to Baby Driver. So we call the movie Mini Driver.
Oh. So that's why you wanted to get that out.
That was the payoff.
Well,
that was a lot. That was a long way to go. I do agree. I would have liked skipping the jail scene only because, like, it was kind of uncomfortable hearing, you know, this kid's involved in a shitload of murders and armed robberies and whatnot, and the ending is just kind of a big what is that called?
Like,
when,
I'm
like,
sorry.
White people don't suffer consequences for their crimes.
The world.
yeah, it was just kind of like the, you know, it's this white kid, it's like, oh, but he's actually a good person inside. I'm like, that's uncomfortable.
Yeah, like what? Yeah, the lady, he stole her car and he just gives her purse back.
So that
he's
make,
like,
that
I,
makes
I knew he was a good kid.
Yeah, so I was a little bit of like, I could do without this. So yeah, I think Ethan, that's an excellent script doctor. You got what it takes.
All right, thanks. Working on that PhD.
I will tell you mine. None. No sequel.
No sequel?
Just let him go on to the next thing. It works well as a standalone, just like all the rest of his stuff. Just let it be.
Yeah, I'm fine with that too. I'm not itching for a sequel.
Yeah. So pretty much across the board, you should go see it. If you can, still.
Should people go see this?
Yes, I mean, it's pretty obvious at this point. But
I mean, if they listen to the whole podcast at this point, then they've spoiled the movie for themselves. But even so, I would see it twice, so I would still see it if you haven't yet and you've listened to this point.
And especially remember because there is an original song on the soundtrack.
There you go.
To a point you made earlier, Jared, Hot Fuzz, the first time I saw it, I didn't love it as much. And then second time I saw it, I was all in, which I think is maybe kind of a part of his experience, because he does have so much set up in the beginning of the movie that you don't realize at the end. And then watching it again, you can kind of see it all in one piece.
Like Aaron Aronson.
So,
it was perfect.
Like Aaron Aronson. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, kind of to make the musical analogy, that's how, like, one of my favorite bands is the White Stripes, and that's how I felt about just about every new release, is I would be slightly disappointed and, like, not sure about it, kind of like a dog meeting a new dog friend that's going to live with them, and then, you know, re-listening after a while, I'd kind of, I'd like it even more than I was expecting.
So are the White Stripes the other dog, or is it the new record?
I'm the dog.
Yes, you're one of the dogs. That's a given.
Yeah.
Yeah, the White Stripes are the other dog. Like the record, the album itself.
Okay. All right.
This one. But they're all, Jack White and Meg White are also dogs, right?
They're playing the instruments. We're all dogs. You know what the weird thing is? Jack White and Edgar Wright look insanely similar. The point that I saw a picture of Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright once. I'm like, holy shit, are they collaborating with the White Stripes?
That's another thing. Jack White is another man like myself and Edgar Wright that really should wear a beard, because otherwise it's just there's like some weird kind of, you remember Wormtongue from Two Towers and Return of the King?
Yeah, kind of like too doughy.
Yeah, there's just something
Brad Dourif.
There's something weird going on there. It's like a
weak chin. It's no John Hamm chin. He can go
or and bringing this back around, an Edgar suit from like Men in Black. He's wearing an Edgar Wright suit, wearing a Jack White suit. Okay, so we got some quick stuff that we're going to, just some geeky news that I've decided that I wanted to call the Geekstrom Maelstrom here at the end. There's going to be some cool sound effects before this, guy, so be totally ready for that. Yeah. I might do an echo.
Oh, yes.
Maybe a loop. Who knows? We'll see. Maybe one of those air horns from... from like all the songs from Pitbull.
Are vuvuzelas fun again?
From rap music.
Have they ever not been fun? And I think it's pronounced vuvuzela. I wanted to put that out there. Vuvuzela. So the Comic-Con was this last weekend, and DC wanted to remind you that they have a movie coming out called Justice League, I think, something like that.
Is it just Justice League, or is it like Justice League Noon of Justice?
Like colon, the return Dark of the Justice. Noon.
Dark of the Noon.
So they decided to release a 4-minute trailer for Justice League.
Dude.
So you got...
You know, the thing is, I saw Wonder Woman recently, and they have what feels like a 4-minute trailer before that. It's not the same trailer.
That's correct.
So I feel like I've seen this movie already. Yes. It's like, what else could be in there?
And based on the 4 minutes and then this additional 4 minutes, are you any more excited to see this movie?
No. I mean, I didn't see the last one, so like, I probably am dense enough that I'd still be wondering, why isn't Superman in there yet? if you hadn't, like, you know, filled me in. I was wondering, why isn't Green Lantern in there? Is there a reason?
I think they, as far as their DCU, extended universe type situation that they have going on, that's been kind of force-fed to the masses. They haven't got back around to Green Lantern.
Yeah, but they mention him in the trailer, though. They say there's no Kryptonian, there's no Lantern, Earth is... Is that just supposed to be like a nerd
did they say,
wink?
Did they say
like,
Lantern in there?
I could not understand what that dude was saying. I had no idea what he was saying.
Do you guys know the name of the bad guy in this movie?
No. X-Man?
His name is fucking Steppenwolf.
Steppenwolf?
Yeah, it's almost like that should have... Steppenwolf should have had a song on the Baby Driver soundtrack, and that's where they got the name from. But no, it's just a bad guy who is like a herald.
Do you know who that is? I've never heard of that
character. You know how... Not that this is a really direct correlation, but you know Galactus from the big purple-headed Jack from...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he has heralds, and the Silver Surfer is one of the heralds. Like, a guy is like, shit's about to go down, so I'm going to, like, fuck shit up, and then Galactus is going to come. Well, Steppenwolf is that for a character that I believe is called Darkseid, which is the DC's...
Okay, yeah, I've seen Darkseid.
...version of Thanos. Yeah.
Yeah, Darkseid of the Moon.
Yeah.
I mean, it does feel like they're doing the exact same thing as the Avengers, doesn't it?
Yes.
Like, just some random dickhead... Because, like, Wonder Woman's right. kind of the Thor equivalent, because she's, like, a god from
a
weird...
Yeah, she's
kind of
like a Thor-Captain America mix, because she's got that woman out of time type situation, you know, that whole thing going on.
Exactly. And then this guy's kind of, like, beaming in to that weird... To remind you that that weird zone exists.
Yeah.
He's beaming in there, and then he's bringing a generic army that everyone has to kill.
Well, to push that further, too... It looks like the Flash character is Spider-Man because he's like the young, inexperienced comic relief character.
That, and he's also Quicksilver from the X-Men movies. And I don't, that's easy to make that comparison because they're just both fast and you can only really show speed in so many ways. Yeah. but the fact that.
Yeah, but why do they keep showing it as slowing everything down so much? That's what they always
well,
do.
Well, that's exactly. Cool. That's the thing. It's just like, oh, you know that gimmick where. In both the last two X-Men movies, they did that exact same scene over and over again, except for in the more recent one.
They did that in that DreamWorks like movie about raccoons.
Yeah, when
like
he had like the
ago,
energy drink or too many cookies or something like that.
Yeah, and they did it in Futurama.
It was a Futurama,
also,
yeah.
like 15 years ago. Yeah, it's been done. Yeah.
Well, Jared, it's also Zack Snyder, so any chance
well,
to use slow-mo.
To be fair.
Is it again?
It was for the most part, and then he had a family situation, so now Josh Whedon has stepped in. And you can tell immediately because if Jared, I don't know if you recognize this, but the one that you saw that was 18 minutes long in front of Wonder Woman was much, much, much darker than this one. And I don't mean in terms of tone, but in terms of actual color. Apparently Joss Whedon...
Wait, they brought Joss Whedon to like pitch hit for directing?
Yes.
That is weird.
Yes, it is weird. It's very strange. Mm. There's a lot of
I totally forgot about
incestuous
that.
Stuff going on between Marvel and DC these days. It's just weird, you know. It's you know,
they're trying really hard to make Aquaman cool. I'll say that much.
Well, I think that's one of those things where you're like, oh cool. man, people fucking love that guy in Game of Thrones 5 years ago.
I mean, he was awesome in Game of Thrones.
But then they forget that he was in Hercules, or not Hercules. Sorry, Conan. The Conan the Barbarian reboot, which went absolutely nowhere.
That happened?
Exactly. That's the point.
I've never even heard of this.
It's like,
that was just binned after it was unworkable?
It's like, that, let's make that this motherfucker, Aquaman, the coolest of all the DC characters. Well,
yeah, I mean, they're definitely putting a lot of weight on him.
They're really, I honestly think that if Wonder Woman hadn't come out and been as successful as it was... they would be shitting themselves right now because
they would just go direct to video with
well
this.
they're like they're definitely going to be counting on her and fans of hers to sustain this movie going out because the amount of money that they put into it at this point, which is one of my next things I'm going to talk about, if they don't make $1 billion, like they're really going to have to decide if they want to go forward with it, because I think
let me ask. Oh, go
well,
ahead.
I think the one prior to this, Batman vs. Superman, didn't get there. I think it made it like around 600 or 700, which of course, obviously, is still a shit ton of money. But when you're putting as much money into it as you are, especially with your stars and your directors and all the marketing and everything, and it doesn't quite get the Avengers money that they're pulling in on almost every movie they put out, it's not good.
Well, I'll say this, like, okay, I never saw the second Avengers movie. Based on the trailer, I got that it was about, like, Tony Stark made a robot and the robot turned evil. After seeing 4 full minutes of a preview, what is this movie about?
Just people getting together and fighting shit.
It's the Avengers.
It's just
the first one.
Yeah, but it's just like a bad guy is showing up. We got to fight him. Like, that's all I can get from it. And it's like, that's not really interesting, right? No.
I mean, at this point, no.
It's still, I mean, I think if you're looking at the assembled cast, not the actual actors themselves, but the characters in the movie, there's just so much nerdy clout that they're assuming that you can count on those people. Like, it's the same thing whereas, like, Nintendo can put out a million fucking consoles and every kid that's an actual fan of Nintendo is going to buy every single one of them because they're a Nintendo fan. And so that's what DC mm-hmm. expects. It's like, we're going to put out a Batman movie, you're going to see it. We're even going to put out a Suicide Squad movie, which is essentially just like a bunch of Batman's B-level bad guys, and you're going to see that shit too. And the movie was awful, but people still went to see it because it was like it had like Batman in it for like maybe 3 minutes total, half of which was
Batman was in that movie.
Yeah, and that was enough.
Was it Ben Affleck?
Yeah, Batfleck. Yeah.
Oh,
so
Batfleck. I feel like that's the worst call that I've heard in so long, because I feel like Ben Affleck being Batman kind of neutralizes the appeal of Batman being in the movie, and so you're just left with kind of like you said, Wonder Woman is like the only character that is at all appealing in that group.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm interested in Flash too.
I do think the Flash will be interesting, and I like that actor. But I think that from what I'm hearing, and again, this is a podcast for another time, but that what they plan on, if any goodwill that they get, that they're going to squander in his standalone movie. Which is what I was worried about happening with Wonder Woman, so I hope that I'm wrong about that as well, because Wonder Woman was a lot of fun, and it was silly and really, really dumb at points, but it was enjoyable dumb, and Gal Gadot is just lovely. She's just a joy to watch on screen. But, you know, I think that might be the type of thing, and, you know, we haven't even talked about it because it doesn't even fucking matter. There's a guy named Cyborg in this movie, and I know that he's a character that exists in the DC, and he was in the Teen Titans and everything like that, but what the fuck? Who cares? And I mean, I guess you'd be like...
That's what I'm saying. If you don't have Green Lantern, I feel like he's a way bigger, higher tier dude.
And then people that are like, also... you guys fucking... What? You give Marvel passes, and this would be them talking to me, because I do that. And they'd be like, there's fucking Hawkeye was in the Avengers. I'm like, yeah, but... They were very much aware.
There were at least like 4 characters you cared about in there, though, just for being cool toys. Yeah. I guess my closing remarks on this is there was one line that kind of stood out to me where they said something to the effect of, "We don't need to recognize this world; we just need to save it." And I feel like that was like almost said directly to the viewer, like, "You don't need to know what the hell's going on; we're just saving the world. That's what's happening. You have to watch it."
Well, just so you know, that they needed, they just did reshots on this movie.
That's a good sign. Always
good. And it was $25 million, an additional $25 million in reshoots.
Yikes.
And guess what part of that money went to?
Affleck?
It went to
digitally
removing the mustache off of Superman.
Off of Superman?
Wait.
Superman's in this movie?
So he's in the movie. Mustache?
Well, that's the thing. It's one of those things where it's like, oh, you know, maybe people... I mean, it's obvious that it's coming back, right? But maybe people didn't know. But then you put out a press release that says we had to spend part of our $25 million to win...
To Superman the 70s?
They couldn't buy a Bic for, like, a dollar?
Well, it gets into the weeds there.
We already shot it.
The how does Superman shave thing that people like to talk about when they're like, I want to make sure that people really know that I'm a nerd. You know, it's like, oh, you have to shoot, Superman has to shoot his eye lasers off of crystals from Krypton and redirect them back at his face to be able to shave his stubble. And I'm just like, okay, all right, whatever. But yeah,
cool.
That was part of the that was part of that whole thing.
Yeah, I really hope that they make a point of that in the movie. He had a beard in the other movie, didn't he? In the first one?
I think he did when he was in Alaska or whatever.
When he was like on a big rig.
Yeah.
He must be an alien then.
Whatever. And the last wait, you got
so
something?
No, I'm sorry. So at the end of the trailer, when that person's off screen talking to
Albert,
that's Superman.
Alfred.
No, that's Cyborg.
No, it's supposed to be like an unknown character,
who did
right?
You
like
say?
Oh, yeah, he says, oh, you showed up
yeah.
too.
I
don't
know. Hopefully
you're
not
was...
too late.
Yeah.
It's got to be Superman.
Oh,
right?
I was wondering who that was. Who else? Maybe it's Apache Chief.
Oh, what was I saying?
Capital G.
He would say like Inekchok, and then he would get really tall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, man.
Oh my god.
That was great. You know they're actually supposed to have a Justice League Hall in this movie.
Nice.
Mm.
So.
Yeah, because they had a lot of like D-listers. Yeah. They should just bring them all in and just have fun
Why
with
not?
It.
Yeah, where's
Wright
the
should direct that movie?
That would be the one that I would think I would be okay with.
Isn't there just like an alien dude, like Alien Hunter,
Martian
his name or something?
Yep.
Oh yeah, yeah, the green
Martian
guy.
Hunter. Yeah.
Martian.
Isn't his name
guy.
Like Dave?
Whose name is like John Smith, I believe. I think he decided. You know, he came to Earth and he's like, I'm gonna decide whatever my name is. It's just gonna be John Smith. Why not?
Yeah. Why don't they have that guy?
So
that guy's
be a
pretty
Mormon.
Cool. He's at least like visually exciting.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously things come from space. You know, Superman came from space, so why can't we get a Martian in there? But whatever.
Yeah.
And the last geeky thing I have is, are you guys familiar with the Thor movie that's coming out later this year?
We did a podcast
trailer.
It's one of those, like, you know, setting up what we're going to talk about by asking a rhetorical question. One of those things, you know?
Oh, okay.
So we'll give it another shot. Hey, you guys know that Ragnarok movie that's coming out later this year?
Yeah.
Damn it. So, and again, it's another name that I'm not sure.
Jeff Goldblum?
Taika Waititi? The cat from New Zealand that's directing this movie. He did What We Do in the Shadows and Hunt for the Wilder People, all that stuff. He directed this movie, and he claims that 80% of the script was improvised, or 80% of the movie is improvised.
Wow.
So.
That's a lot of wasted CG.
Ballsy.
Well, you know, a lot of those, you should know this, Asterix our guy, all those Pixar movies, they do a lot of that prior, and then they go and they do the animation afterwards, and they are able to, like, kind of get the emotions off of the voice actors and then put that into the characters, so probably not wasted
It's going to be like Anchorman, the superhero movie?
Sort of, and so it reminded me that Iron Man didn't have a script when it was being shot. It was, like, being written as they went, and that was part of
Didn't Junior like improvise a lot of his stuff,
so
and that's why it was a fun movie.
Exactly. And I think probably what most people still consider Junior. To be the best the best Marvel movie, I think people still would kind of put that up there as being, as far as like an actual film is concerned, one of the better ones, if not the best. So what do you guys think about that, having improvisation in movies that are about people flying around and shit?
Do you have Robert Downey Jr. on the staff, or is it Liam Hemsworth or whatever his name
Liam
is?
Liam Hemsworth is the younger
Which
brother.
Hemsworth is this
Thank
guy?
You very much. It's Chris Hemsworth.
Chris Hemsworth, yeah. I don't know if I would trust this guy to come up with zingers.
He's actually pretty funny.
Goldblum, though.
Goldblum.
Yeah, Goldblum, he can carry it.
I would just let the camera roll. Goldblum, go for it.
I think even Ruffalo probably could hold his own.
Yeah, but he's going to be Hulk most of the time, and I'm pretty sure they're going to have him be toddler Hulk, where he's just like, Hulk smash, puny humans. So I don't know. There's not a lot of improvisation you can probably get into that small of a vocabulary. You need prepositions.
I think
for
it
improv.
Definitely depends on the movie. It seems like they're pushing this one to be a lot more. I mean, Thor movies have always been a lot more comedic, I think,
yeah.
other than anything outside of maybe Iron Man. But Iron Man was very specifically comedy of fast talking.
Yeah.
Thor was a lot more slapstick and silliness. Mm-hmm. And this one, you know, they seem like they're leaning into that. At least the way they're marketing
yeah.
it is a lot in that direction. So, I mean, I'd be interested. I don't think there's any value to Thor if it's not, like, funny and embracing how, like, stupid
yes.
it is. So, I'm all for it.
I like it. I'm excited. I think I haven't watched that newer trailer. I've watched everything that's come out on Justice League because I don't care about that movie.
yeah, it doesn't matter if you spoil it.
But with ones that I actually care about, I have a first trailer only rule. So I haven't watched the
yeah.
more recent one for Thor, but I hear a lot of good things. So I'm pretty excited for that because it seems like, you know, all of these movies.
I mean, I really love Kate Blanchett too.
Oh, jeez.
Oh yeah.
She's so good.
How could we forget?
God, she's Galadriel. Sorry, I got a little misty eyed there. I was thinking about how much they love stars and stuff. But yeah, it'll be fun because I think a lot of the superhero movies, really, especially, you know, with something like Justice League maybe coming out this year, because who knows what's going to happen all this reshoot stuff. It's like they forget that they're comic books, you know. And I know that there's a lot of graphic novels and even just regular comic book series that, you know, can be serious and still be good and stuff like that. But, you know, when it's a movie, you know that you're going to be in there for about 2 hours. I think it should be fun for the most part. Like, not necessarily just silly to be silly, but just, you know, like an enjoyable thing. And it seems like with this movie coming up that they're really, like, kind of going for it, you know. So when I heard about the improv stuff, I was pretty excited.
Yeah, I mean, what a concept to try and make it a just entertaining movie and fun.
Who would have guessed?
Well, I mean, the problem is DC has their head up their asses, and they're like, oh, Christopher Nolan's style was very stripped down. Mm-hmm. That's what makes a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, like, that's just, like, really that one guy's style that he made work.
Yes.
It doesn't mean that if you remove fun from the movie that it's, like, you know, inherently going to be good.
Yeah, that's
going
to somehow
yeah, like,
be...
like, most problems in Hollywood, just blame Christopher Nolan.
Yes, that's true. Okay. So you at least one of you needs to see Dunkirk so we can talk about it on maybe the other podcast.
I'll probably see it.
Yeah. See it in yeah. see it in 70 if you can.
I'll see
do
it.
Do they have any 70 millimeter theaters out there?
They do,
they
but they're
IMAX,
all sold
yeah.
out.
Well, scalp a ticket, man.
Here in Austin.
Get at it. Oh.
I'll work on it.
Yeah, that's going to be tough. I, like the listeners, I thought that you were Jared talking at that moment, so I was confused as to, I'm like, you don't live in Austin, come on. But you do live in Austin.
I do, it's me, Ethan.
Hey, it's me.
Come see Ethan. Me.
All right, so I guess that'll do for this first edition of Geekstrum. Thank you, fellas, for helping me out with this. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. Have a geekery.
I was gonna
day.
Say some stuff. Don't, can I still say some stuff?
Don't say that.
Come on, man. You get to say all that cool shit at the end of your podcast, and you're just like, "Fuck off, homie. We're done. You got your hour.
Ooh,
get out
I'm
of
stealing
here.
That.
That's a good sign off.
Let's see. If I put it on our website, does it automatically go to iTunes and Stitcher, or do I have to do that myself?
You have to do it, or you can ask me, and I'll help.
All right.
Do it.
Well, did you guys know that possibly with the help of Jared, this will be available on iTunes and Stitcher, and that you could probably subscribe at those places and rate this podcast there as well. So that's amazing. And if for any reason that you feel that any of the shit that we just said, was actually shit and not just me trying to sound like a tough guy by using curse words, you can comment below or anywhere on Hard Men to Please, which you should check out, which is the website that we all, like I said, sporadically write for and do podcasts for and stuff. And there is also a Twitter for Geekstrum, and it's spelled like the word geek normally is, but the strum is like you're strumming a guitar. STRUM, Geekstrum on Twitter.
I thought it was Geek Strong.
It was, but then I went on Twitter and there was a bunch of ones with O's, and there was a guy who had literally spelled out as his Twitter handle geekstrum.com. And I was like, well, this sucks. So I was like, you know what? User cool. I'm going to use that instead. And then I thought, maybe I'll use a umlaut, but I was like, I don't know if that changes what the word sounds like.
Ooh.
So, you know.
Oh, that's still cooler though, because it sounds like you're just jamming, like with
that's
a guitar.
That's right. We're geeks that strum guitars, and that's what this podcast has been about. You've all been tricked. Now the podcast really started. We're going to talk about guitar stuff for the next 3 hours. But yeah, thank you guys. I really appreciate it. And have a good evening or morning or afternoon, whenever it is you're actually listening to this.
All right. Fuck off, homie.
Damn it. I'm going to say that.
Definitely leaving that in there.